Welcome to Inclusion Matters, produced by the Center for Inclusive Childcare,
aka the CICC.
We're located at inclusivechildcare.org.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast of the Center for Inclusive Childcare. My name is Cindy Croft, and I'm director of the center, and I'm here today with Priscilla Weigel and Dia Anderson. Hi, ladies.
Hello.
We are excited to do part two of He Likes to Play Alone, kind of our idea. We're talking about children maybe on the autism spectrum or at any rate children who really need some help in developing those important early play skills. And in our first podcast, part one, we talked about some of those play challenges, and today we want to be a little more specific about how you can support a child who has some of those play challenges. But we thought we'd start with a little overview of how important some of those important early play skills, and maybe Dia, you could recap for the people listening what we're talking about.
Sure. Well, based on just the basic play skills that are mentioned in one of the resources that we have found very helpful is Hand in Hand, which is supporting children with play problems, and they talk about just basic play skills are, you know, first of all the ability to initiate and make choices in the things that they want to play with, and being able to stay at that play for any length of time, to start a play interaction and then maintain that, to keep that going, which is similar with, you know, staying with that activity for a period of time, having some persistence rather than perseverance on the play. Play is also an opportunity for children to create and experiment with different things, to try, you know, add unusual objects to the block area, those kinds of things. Also, just to find joy in play. Play, it should be a happy time. Fun, and you should hear laughter and, you know, play. I always think of playtime in a classroom is not a quiet time. It's a time where there's lots of laughter and talking and conversation. Kind of one of the higher level play skills is just being able to join a group of peers who are playing together and be able to negotiate and cooperate. And part of that is being able to communicate what you want to play, what your play needs are, but to also understand that your peers have some preferences and different ways they want the play activity to go. So those are just kind of the basic. And as you can see, it really, it does build on step from step. You start out with just making basic choices to moving up to being able to cooperate and get along with others.
Right. And that choice piece is a great place to start. So you have it, let's say you have a child that just doesn't know where to begin, and they tend to stick to that independent, solitary, alone play. By helping them with making the choice, you sometimes, as you said in the last one, they need a play plan. They need a roadmap. They need a recipe.
Right. Right.
And so for some children, if they're able to read, you can just write down a list. And one little boy that I know, his provider just gives him a list of, these are the six things you're going to do for free play. And it's for him, it gets him going. It gets him started. He knows, it says here at number one, I'm going to paint at the easel. Now, sustaining that play, that can be a challenge. So does that mean that you just go to the easel and you pick up the brush and you just swipe it really fast and then you move to the next thing? No. You try to help that child sustain some play in that set. So that's a way to help with those choices. Or you might want to say, it looks like you need help making a choice today. Where do you want to start to play? Or what did you play with yesterday? Remember at the end of the morning? Remember, I think I still have that out. So you sometimes have to direct kids to start on that path as far as that roadmap. But that's where that choice making starts. And then eventually, the goal and the hope is that you won't need to do that, that they're going to do that on their own. And then they can move to that the next level of things of, now I'm doing this. Now we're going to look at that proximity piece that you talked about of being near other friends, doing the same thing maybe, but right. not necessarily being connected right. to it.
Well, one thing, Priscilla, I just wanted to mention a thought I had when you were talking about, you know, when we want them, for instance, painting at the easel. You know, yes, we do want them to be able to stay with that activity for a time, but maybe the first few times it is just they go.
Right, right.
If it's something they've never done before, mm-hmm. Then I think it is okay to have it just be, maybe it's just a minute
mm-hmm.
or something, but it's that, you know, we can't expect them to stay with something for 10 minutes
right
away, but that we need to, you know, give them those little spurts of success,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, all of us, you know, when we feel successful, we want to keep doing it.
Right.
I was going to mention also, we talked about in the last podcast, if there are ways to bring in that child's particular interest too, and to weave that into all the different other activities. So there may be one place they really, really like to stay, but if we could move those interests into art, so... You know,
right.
a picture of the thing that they're really interested in.
I have a great example mm-hmm. of one of my my nieces. Her son, when he was in preschool, the only thing he wanted to play with were cars.
Mm-hmm.
Had no interest in anything else. Would not do art. Wanted nothing to do with it. Until finally, the teacher had an idea of they could paint by dipping the car, the wheels of the car,
good, yeah.
into paint and then drive it on the paper.
Yeah.
That he was 4 years old, and that was the first art project he ever did.
Yeah, it's very creative.
It can make a huge difference.
Yeah.
yeah. And another example would be, let's say you have a child that loves reptiles. Well, then
yeah.
having just different snakes and things cut out or drawn on a piece of paper that would the child can decorate or whatever. All it does is really just help draw them to that area, as you
with
said. Maybe you need to have, maybe a child loves dinosaurs. Having dinosaurs throughout the room, at the easel, the paper's cut out like a giant dinosaur or an egg of a dinosaur. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many ways to just spur that connection.
Or then your movement activity for that
right.
day is, let's move like dinosaurs.
Right.
Let's
yeah.
talk to each other the way dinosaurs would talk.
Yeah.
Just something to get them interested
in
that activity.
And
right.
Connected
is a great word.
And then you're doing another important play skill or social competence in bringing that child into other children's proximity.
Mm-hmm.
So you're hopefully, even at the easel, you may have two easels set up next to each other. So
mm-hmm.
you brought the child in, they're painting something they are interested in using the car.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're sharing it with their friend, maybe they're not, but at least they're in proximity with another child. And so we're starting this gradual process of affiliation,
mm-hmm.
which for kids who are on the autism spectrum, affiliation is a very difficult skill to develop. So.
Well, and I think another thing that we're trying to do too is we also want the other children to see the value in playing with this peer.
Yes. Right.
That this peer has a lot of great ideas and knows mm-hmm. how to have fun. And so it's really,
right.
we're
yeah,
helping, you know, the child who's challenged with exploring and expanding play. But we also want the other children, we want to develop an interest in them to play with that
yes,
peer.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And so we've talked about proximity being important. We've talked about that practice of play, kind of having that roadmap, and then moving on to that partnering piece.
Right, and that's kind of where that starts.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think that sometimes we have to plan the partnering piece
yes.
because most of the time we know that for ease and comfort, that child's chosen to play alone, so they don't have a real full repertoire of playmates.
Right.
But there's always those children that you know that are really good players. Some kids, it's just easy and it flows. They show extra patience. They show extra encouragement of their peers. They're kids that are easily easygoing, so another
mm-hmm.
child could come in and say, let's do this, and they're okay with that. So they're not going to shoot that idea down over and over, because as you said, the more you're doing something and you learn to enjoy it and it goes well, you want to keep doing it. So we
right.
want that partnering relationship to be positive. So setting up and I think even just trying once a day to partner, if that's where you start, one play partnering opportunity a day, beginning to just help that child see that success. So some of those things could be just dumping out a puzzle, moving the pieces into two different piles and saying, okay, you two, I need you to check out this new puzzle I just found and see if it's a good one. Yeah. Can you work together to put that together? Will you do that for me? Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And then step away. But you're still close enough to shadow and kind of monitor so that if that starts to fall apart, you may step in. But you're allowing that child to have that play experience that's positive, and it ends in a success because obviously you put the puzzle together, there you go. And that's where they build those little moments of joy.
But you're you're so right in saying that there has to be some planning in
that.
Because we want it, first of all, we really want it to work.
Yeah, right.
So we've got to know which child will mesh best with the child that we're sort of targeting for the intervention, the play intervention. Mm-hmm. And then we want it to be a good experience for both of them. And so we need to have an item that will hold the interest of both, or items, or whatever the activity is. So yeah, it takes a little bit of thought, but teachers are such creative creatures, and they just have to think about it a little bit, and how then could that be extended and expanded in that play experience for these two children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great idea.
Well, and some folks that I've known over the years have a special basket of play partnering toys, so those are only out when it's time to partner with someone, that makes that novelty and that excitement and that new thing more exciting, and both kids are drawn, as you said, and find enjoyment, and then that adds to that whole, I want to play with that guy, because remember yesterday we did that puzzle, and boy, he's really good at those tricky ones, and all those positive emotions, which that's what play is about.
Yep, exactly. Well, I think these are great strategies, and I hope they are helpful to those who are listening. Again, I'll encourage people to go to our website and look at our different info modules and self-study courses, and we have an info module that is called Encouraging Play Skills in Children with Autism that has some very specific strategies I think you'll all find very useful. And we're also starting a new sort of activity that goes along with our podcast. Priscilla, you want to tell us about that?
Sure. We mentioned a little bit in part one, just we're adding a discussion question to the description for our podcast so that you, if you feel like you want to use these in a group and have more of a talk about what you've heard and learned and share some insights together, it's just a way to kind of move to beyond more of a reflection on the podcast and the content and hopefully make your learning more worthwhile.
Great. So thank you both very much. It was a really good discussion today. I hope
it'll
be useful.
Okay. Thank you.
That's all for now. See you next time.